In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives, amen. So Jesus is saying, if you want to be my disciple, you must hate your father and mother. You must hate your wife and child. You must hate your brothers and sisters. You must hate even life itself. And then he says, you must take up your cross. If you want to be my disciple, you must take up your cross. And if you want to be my disciple, you must give away all your possessions. This is not the ideal text to begin a new program year and make people want to come to church. I'm like, oh my gosh. We're just starting a new year, and this is how we're going to start. Here we go. The context is that Jesus is on a journey, right? Jesus is journeying from the Galilee region and, you know, the place of his birth and the place of his home down into Jerusalem. And he's making this long journey to the ascent. And the reader knows that it is going to end in his death. So he is on this long journey down towards Jerusalem. And there are crowds of people following him, making the journey with him. That's the context. And the context is he's left family. Like, he's left his father and mother and his family. He was raised to be a carpenter. His dad raised him to be a carpenter and take on the family business, and Jesus didn't do that. He called his disciples. He said, hey, come and follow me, to Peter and James and John and all these guys who are fishing by the lake, and they left their nets and they followed him, and they left their livelihoods behind. This has been the pattern of this thing so far, that, you know, this is a culture where your family relationships really matter. You have obligations to people. The call to hate them was as jarring then as it is now. In the book of Matthew, it's a little easier. Jesus says, well, you need to love them less. Matthew was a little bit easier. I mean, let Jesus off the hook there a little bit. In Luke, the hyperbole gets ratcheted up, right? He says you need to hate them. And the word is abhor and detest and whatever. And most people, I mean, he's trying to get their attention. He's got all these crowds of people behind him, and Jesus is using hyperbole to get their attention. Because they're like, whoa, Jesus, you were just talking about love your enemies. You were just talking about the Prince of Peace, and God is love, and now all of a sudden hate? What's up with that? I mean, most people agree, and it's clear from the context. I mean, part of what's jarring for us is it sounds like Jesus is calling you to have an emotion, to have a feeling about people. Like you should have this feeling about your father and mother, and you should have this feeling about your wife and the kids, and you know, it's not a good feeling. It's this feeling that wants to cause them harm and detest them and abhors them. And it's pretty clear Jesus isn't asking you to have a feeling. He's not saying that we should actually have this feeling, but he is saying that actually, no, there is a need for disavowal. There is a need to separate. There is a need to create a gap, because if these bonds are stronger than the call you are hearing from me, you're not going to be able to take the journey. You won't be able to get into the journey and understand the journey if the bond you feel for family, if the bond you feel for the stuff you own, if the cross you carry looms larger than your relationship with me, then you're not going to understand the journey. Because it is about a journey. A little later on here in the story, and Jesus is saying you need to count the cost of the journey. Because there is a cost to journey. Any journey worth taking has a cost. It's the nature of journeys, because you're uprooting yourself and you're moving and you're going, whether it's a physical journey, whether it's a metaphorical journey, there is a cost to a journey. Later in the service, we're going to invite kids and anybody who's, you know, embarking on this new school year to come forward and receive a blessing for their backpacks and their books and their crayons and pencils. And in many ways, we have just asked our youth, we're asking them to do a journey, right? They don't have a lot of choice in it, actually, right? I mean, and there is a cost. there is a cost to them. They've had 3 months where they've been able to play and hang out and have free time and da-da-da. And now all of a sudden we're saying, no, every morning you're going to get up at 6:30 and we're going to drive you to school and you're going to do this thing and you're going to do your homework. And we don't give them a lot of choice about that, right? There is a cost to that journey. And yet we ask them to do it because we believe that there's a deep benefit to that journey. There's something about learning math and being able to read and understanding science and history and geography that's going to help you ultimately navigate this world that we live in. And we know that our kids need this in order to survive, in order to flourish. So we ask them to go on that journey. It's different. There's other kinds of journeys, right? A vacation is a journey, and there is a cost to it, right? You have to count the cost. Are you willing to pay however many thousands of dollars it's going to take this cruise or to fly over there and stay in Airbnbs and, you know, eat out? And for the people who make those journeys, you assess the cost of it and you say, yeah, actually, the opportunity to go to this place, the opportunity to kind of have this period of rest and relaxation, this period of separation, like this journey is actually worth the cost. I'm going to pay the cost of that journey so that I can experience the benefit of it. So there is a cost to journeys. Any journey worth taking, there's a cost to it. Jesus is calling us to a particular kind of journey, right? He's calling us to a journey that actually has weight and gravity and meaning and deep, profound joy and peace. It's like a tree planted by the water whose roots are deep, which is the psalm that we sang, right? There's that sense of peace to it. Not all journeys, though, have that same sort of focus. I met a man when I was on my spiritual retreat, a 26-year-old guy who called himself a hobo. I mean, that's how he defined himself. He was a hobo. Because he was 18 years old, he grew up in Oregon, and he was part of his church youth group and used to play the violin in his church youth group. And then when he was 18, he realized he didn't like Christianity and so wanted to get away from that. And he was looking at his future of, okay, I can work as a barista at Starbucks or somebody at 7-Eleven and try to scrape together rent, or I can go hop on a train and have an adventure. So that's what he did, is he hopped on a train in order to have an adventure, and he's not stopped. It's 8 years later. And he said, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Coquitlam. He's like, oh, yeah, I know Poco. That's a great place. Apparently, Poco's a great place to catch freight trains if you want to go east. I didn't know. Who knew, right? And then now, so that's what he does. He hops on freight trains, and, he goes east, and along the way, he doesn't have any money, so he's learning how to live off the land. He's learned how to forage for mushrooms, and he meets all these people who are like gathering wild rice and hunting for wild boar, and they're living off the land, right? And when I met him, he had just completed 2 months of a trail that started in Montana and ended up on the coast. And I'm like, you don't have a job. Like, how do you afford food to like pay for this? And he's like, well, he spent some time in his mom's house dumpster diving. Collecting all this food that gets thrown away at grocery stores that's, just past the date of expiration, but it's still worth eating. So he collects all this free food and he uses his mom's dehydrator to dehydrate it. And then he's got all this food he can eat, to supplement, right? He's got it worked out. Here's somebody who's given up possessions. He doesn't have much possessions. He's given up his ties to family. Except his mom's dehydrated. There is that. And as I was talking to him, he had the good sense to acknowledge that he is still dependent in still fundamental ways, right? But I was struck from it. Like, I get it. Like, in terms of a choice, if your choice is to do this miserable, low-end paying part-time job and try to scrape together rent and just live to survive versus the adventure he's on, I'm not sure he made a bad choice, quite honestly. If those are your options, right? But what I was struck by was his rootlessness. Like, he's on this journey. There's no way for him to really get off of this journey. There's no direction to this journey. There's no point to his journey. And I was struck by that in my conversation with him, just that his own sense of having no real clear direction. mean, it's important that the journey we're on have meaning, that the journey we're on has weight and significance for who we are, that actually the journey we're on is a way of stepping deeper into ourselves and the life that we can live in this world and the people that God has created us to be. That's the journey that Jesus is calling us to. And Jesus says, if you want to be on that journey, you got to count the cost. You got to realize if there are bonds that keep you tied down that are more significant than the journey you're about to be on, it's going to get in your way. If you are owned by your possessions, right? It's not that you own your possessions. Your possessions own you, and you're so stuck in your relationship to your stuff, that's going to get in your way. If your cross, the trauma, the tragedy, you know, the hurt, the pain in your life is larger than your connection to me, it's going to weigh you down. It's like you got to count the cost. Step in, if you want to step into it, this needs to matter. The journey with me needs to matter more than family, more than your brothers and sisters, more than life itself. It needs to matter more than your possessions so that you can be freer in relationship to your possessions and not be owned by them, but have freedom in relationship to your stuff. If you want freedom from the cross, take up the pain, take up the suffering, take up the trauma that is your cross, the tragedy that is your cross. And let God remake it and renew it and turn it into something that is life-giving. Let God take it and make it into something new. The journey is worth it. But there's a challenge here to step deeper into it. Amen.